The Leonard Lopate Show really needs your help. We are conducting an anonymous 5-minute survey to learn a bit about you and the podcast that you love. So visit wmyc.podcastingsurvey.com to find it, or click on the link in our show notes or on our show page. We'd really appreciate your help. Knowing more about you helps us put together more of the shows that you enjoy. Again, that's wnyc.podcastingsurvey.com. Thank you from all of us at the Leonard Lopate Show. How did a 1,500-page novel about a man imprisoned for stealing a loaf of bread in 19th-century France become the greatest publishing sensation of its age? Les Misérables, written by Victor Hugo, was a smash hit as soon as it was published in 1862, and it's maintained its popularity ever since, with the help, of course, of many film and musical adaptations. David Bellows traces the life of the novel from conception to publication in his book called The Novel of the Century, The Extraordinary Adventure of Les Misérables. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased it has brought author and translator David Bellows back to our show. Welcome back.
I'm glad to be here again.
Why are you confident in calling Les Misérables the novel of the century, considering that it had some pretty strong competition? War and Peace, Great Expectations, Middlemarch, Moby Dick, The Brothers Karamazov. I can go on. Pride and Prejudice.
Yes, you can. The Madame 19th Bovary. Century is full of very wonderful novels, especially the 1860s. I mean, Les Misérables appears, as it were, in the middle of the greatest decade in history for the production of novels in Russia, in England, with Great Expectations, and in France as well. I call it the novel of the century because, for two separate, rather independent reasons. One, it really was the best-selling novel of the century. It was the novel of the century in the sense of the biggest book deal of all. It was the novel that was destined to reach the widest public most quickly, and a global public as well, very quickly.
It was translated into English, into two different versions, right?
Two different
a British
English
version
versions.
And an American version?
That's right. Within 9 months,
wow.
It was out both in London and New York. So it's the novel of the century in that kind of public relations sense, a sort of publisher's hype sense. But it's also, unlike Great Expectations, unlike War and Peace, it really is a novel, a work of encyclopedic ambition that wants to tell you what it is like to live in the 19th century, specifically to tell you about, well, at least Hugo's vision of what the now and the immediate future are like and ought to be like and what needs to be done about them. And that's an ambition that is present in Dickens's work, but it's not so completely done in any one of his novels, and it's an ambition that isn't really quite there in Tolstoy. So I think it is and I think Hugo also thought of it as le roman du siècle in the sense of the novel about his own time.
He included personal essays in it. It's not just a work of fiction.
It's a double work. It is, of course, a story, a well-told story, a large and complicated story that all ties up and comes out right in the end. But that's right, it is also a novel about everything else, including himself. It's about history, it's about town planning, it's about the military, it's about war, it's about all the big issues that Hugo thought made up the crucial problems of the 19th century.
Although you teach French and comparative literature at Princeton, you admit to having put off reading Les Misérables for a long time. Why?
Well, yes, and I mean, my writing of this book is really a kind of a penance and a self-flagellation.
Reading it can feel that way too sometimes.
Sorry. Well, I hope not for too many people. Yes, I mean, it's curious. As you know, you look back on your own misspent youth and you wonder, why didn't I do this or didn't I do that? It is, of course, only speculation because I can't really go back and find out anymore. But in my memory, you know, first of all, Les Misérables never appeared then and very rarely appears now on any school or university syllabus simply because it's so long. So it wasn't actually on my syllabus at school, and it wasn't on my syllabus at Oxford. But at the same time, I read plenty of books that weren't on my syllabus, so that's not really an excuse. There was a kind of sniffiness. After all, I was at Oxford, you know. It was a kind of snobbishness about Hugo, that Hugo wrote for the masses and was popular, and we didn't really need to bother about that because we were intellectuals and we read Flaubert and Mallarmé. You know? And I think that's probably what kept me away from it for a certain amount of time.
Did you read it in French first or English?
Yeah, no, in French, yes.
Does it lose something in translation?
Yes, of course. It loses an immense amount. The chapters in the novel about slang, for example, you can translate them, but you can't really feel them unless you know French quite well and read them in French. But at the same time, you know, so much is gained by having it in translation that I wouldn't speak ill of any of the translations except the first one done by Sir Charles Lascelles Wraxall, an absurd military historian of the Victorian era, who, coming onto Victor Hugo's chapter on Waterloo, well, he was a British military historian. He knew what happened at Waterloo, and so he just changed when Hugo was obviously wrong. That first British translation is an absolute scandal. I mean, it really is a dreadful thing, only worth looking at now in order to have a laugh. I would also...
But the American translation also... It took things out because of the feelings of the American South.
That's the pirated edition. The original American translation by Charles Wilbur is actually... It's not perfect, but it's straight, and there's nothing left out, and it's very competent. It was when that edition was pirated in Richmond during the American Civil War, as early as 1863. It's that edition from which things were left out in order not to offend Southern sensibilities.
And it was dubbed by Confederate soldiers Lee's Miserables?
That's right. Well, they pronounced... It seems that they pronounced the title... Because it's very interesting. It was published with the French title right from the start, even in the States. It was called Les Misérables, not The Miserables or anything. But it seems that in the Confederate Army, where they read it out aloud to each other around the campfire at night, and it sounds a silly story, but it's really true. There are plenty of confirming evidence of that. But they pronounced it not Les Misérables, but Les Miserables. Mm-hmm. And they took that name on for themselves as they were losing, and they felt themselves to be the Miserables of General Robert E. Lee, yeah, Lee's Miserables. And it became a kind of a code word for self-identification.
Why do you think this has retained its French name when so many other books have their titles translated?
Yes, it's fairly unusual. Nearly all other books have their titles translated.
Other than Madame Bovary.
Well, those are name titles, okay, they stay the same. But and Les Misérables itself is translated when it goes into German or Russian or Hungarian. It's only into English and Japanese and Korean, as far as I know, that it stays, you know, Les Misérables or some approximation thereof. I think the reason that it does that, the reason that choice has been made, is because in the novel itself, Hugo almost changes the meaning of the word misérable. He makes it a collective term, not just for the poor, yeah? Not just for the wretched, not just for the wicked, because you can call somebody misérable and mean he's a scoundrel, yeah? But he actually wants us to have sympathy and to encompass in a single word all the people who are excluded, oppressed, downtrodden, etc. So Les Misérables comes to mean itself. You know, it's just the name of itself.
Wasn't the original title Les Misères?
Well, you can't quote the first title that Hugo came up with when he was drafting it in the 1840s was Les Misères. In both cases, with Les Misères and with Les Misérables, I think Hugo was really thinking in Latin and saying it in French. And that when he said Les Misères for the original draft, he meant all the woes of the world, miseriae. And when he said Les Misérables 15 years later with the final version, he was thinking miserabiles, you know, those deserving of pity, from the Latin verb miserere, you know, to have mercy on. And Hugo was bilingual French, Latin, and, you know, sometimes, and I think in those instances in particular, there's really, you really have to read the French as a transposition of a Latin word.
My guest is David Bellows, who's written the novel of the century, The Extraordinary Adventure of Les Miserables, from Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. He is the translator of a number of works of modern French fiction. Also, Is That a Fish in Your Ear? Translation and the Meaning of Everything. And I wonder about Hugo and his poetry. How well does that translate? When he was asked to name France's greatest poet, didn't André Gide reply, Hugo, alas?
That's attributed to him, yes. I mean, Gide didn't mean that Hugo wasn't France's greatest poet. He meant that it was a pity that such a national monument, somebody who, for Gide's generation, was an old bore, you know, a Father Christmas lookalike who had sort of more or less done everything. He was France's greatest playwright and France's greatest novelist. That's the alas, is that, you know, I've got nothing new to say. You just can't
was
alter
Was he a great
fact.
Stylist? Because you talked about seeing him as kind of a popular writer. Popular writers tend not to be great stylists.
Hugo straddles the divide between popular and ambitious and aesthetic and refined in a way that perhaps no other writer of the 19th century did or could subsequently do. For Hugo, there was no conflict. There was not a wafer to put between the highest literary and aesthetic ambition and the widest ambition for public support and public appeal. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons it's really interesting to learn about Les Misérables and Victor Hugo. I think it is the last moment in history where you can have not the slightest lack of confidence that popularity means you've done something worthwhile.
Well, it was published even though nobody had read the manuscript first. They just published it on faith?
Absolutely. There was no way that Hugo, who was living in exile, would let go of the manuscript.
And why was he living in exile? Because he had angered... Was he living in exile by his own choice or because he had angered the powers that be?
He had angered the powers that came to be. Mm-hmm. In 1851, the then president, Louis-Napoléon Bonaparte, carried out a kind of coup d'etat on himself, dissolved parliament, assumed authoritarian powers, and eventually renamed himself emperor. At the time of the coup d'etat, Victor Hugo was absolutely furious at it. He ran around the streets posting handbills, calling out people to rebel and to take up arms. And, of course, nothing happened because Louis-Napoléon had the army and he had the bourgeoisie and he had the money. And after a few days, it was obvious that Hugo was a wanted man and that he really had to get out. So he, with the help of various people, he escaped to Belgium. And indeed, by the time he got to Belgium, he'd been declared a persona non grata and would not be allowed back into France.
Are there any themes that make this novel relevant today?
All of it makes the novel relevant today.
Economic inequality?
Economic equality, an appeal for recognition of the value in human beings wherever they are on the social scale. Although it's a completely Franco-French novel, it really isn't about foreigners and immigration. That's just not part of its remit. It is a novel that calls for reconciliation and the recognition of the value of the lowest. Because, after all, it's the story of a convict who becomes a good man through a lifetime of struggle, sacrifice, and effort. And it shows how hard it is to be good, but also how possible it is for anybody to follow that path.
Well, he also was given a very heavy sentence for what we would assume would be would think of as a fairly light crime.
Yes, it's also a novel that, at least in its early stages, arouses your anger at the injustice of the justice system, at the imposition of excessively harsh laws that are really based on class difference rather than on any kind of, I should say, penal ideology or criminal ideology.
Would Hugo be called a leftist today?
By 1861-62, he was called a leftist then. By then, he had moved to the left quite firmly and was a moral voice supporting pretty much every progressive and left-wing cause, including the abolition of capital punishment, the enfranchisement of American blacks, and also calling for universal manhood suffrage.
Was there any concern that the authorities might ban or seize the book?
Absolutely. The Second Empire in France, you know, this is the era of Flaubert and Baudelaire, it was an authoritarian regime, but a rather skittish one. The censorship had considerable powers, but they were not used consistently. But it was sort of unknowable whether it would skittishly decide to pulp Les Misérables or let it be. After all, they had tried to ban Madame Bovary. Madame Bovary had been put on trial only a few years before, and Les Misérables says many more things of direct relevance to policy, domestic and international, than Madame Bovary does. So, yes, there was a permanent uncertainty hanging over it.
Although there was a nice kind of PR campaign for it. His wife, Adele, put out posters and did other things. And lines formed when the next installment came out?
For the first two volumes, that's the Part one, called Fantine, appeared in April, and it was a huge success. And parts three and four, two and three, came out in May. And it was when they were due to be released that these queues formed, these lines formed, from before dawn in the Rue de Seine, and huge crowds just carried off the whole edition.
We're pretty much out of time. We can't get into the whole matter that almost from the start there were stage versions of it. Of course, there have been many movies as well, and even a hit musical some people may have heard of. David Bellows will be speaking with Liesl Schillinger tonight at 7 o'clock at Albertine. That's at 972 Fifth Avenue between 78th and 79th Streets. Free and open to the public. No RSVP necessary. The book, The Novel of the Century, from Farrar, Straus & Giroux.